You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right, let's do this. Welcome to Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. My name is Wes Goldberg. I'm the former editor of AllYouCanHeat.com and a credentialed writer covering the Heat and the NBA for the Step Back, FanRag Sports, and Miami Heat Tip-Off Magazine. You can follow me on Twitter at WC Goldberg.
I'm David O'Mill, a credentialed NBA writer who's covered the Heat for SB Nation and AllYouCanHeat.com. I cover the NBA at large for FanSided and FanRag Sports. And you can follow me and my writing at Twitter on DRomail13.
Today's show is sponsored by MyBookie, your hookup for all of your betting needs. Use the promo code LOCKEDONNBA to get a bonus on top of your first deposit. Today we are going through our Heat player power rankings. So let's start with some rules. What is that? So this is going to be an MVP-style ranking snapshot as of right now. A subjective ranking of who on the Heat has been the most valuable to the team's success so far this season. So we've eliminated some players for obvious reasons, mostly because they haven't played enough or they've just been injured the entire season. Those players are Matt Williams Jr., Derek Walton, Okero White, Rodney Magruder, A.J. Hammonds, and unfortunately we had to eliminate Udonis Haslem as well, just because he hasn't played a whole lot. So that leaves 11 players, and we're going to rank them from last to first, okay? David and I, we have our own lists, and we haven't seen each other's yet, so we'll debate that as we go through. So let's start. David, who do you have at 11 in your Heat player power rankings?
At number 11, I've got Jordan Mickey. He's only played 13 games. He started two of them, though, so he's still been a valuable component of the Heat success, but at the same time, not much of one. He's obviously represents some versatility at the center position with Hassan Whiteside being injured for most of the season. It's been great to get a guy like Mickey out there to have him, you know, develop a little bit more. Obviously a prospect that we liked a lot when he was with Boston. Mm-hmm. I think your appreciation of him dated back even to his collegiate career. So obviously it's great to have him here, but he just hasn't been much of a factor. When he's in there, it's not exactly going to move the needle in terms of wins or losses. He does the job. He does it fairly well, but not well enough to actually merit any kind of serious consideration as an MVP.
Yeah, I've got him at 11 as well, and it's just, you know, he's been nice when he's been playing, but he just hasn't played a whole lot. At number 10, I have Justice Winslow.
Ah, same here.
Yeah, he just hasn't, look, he hasn't really had a moment this season, and I feel like a lot of these guys on this list have at least contributed at least one win just by their individual play. And Winslow just hasn't had that. I don't know if it's a knock on Winslow. Look, he's been hurt for the last several games. He's played in 27 of the 34 games. But moreover, he really hasn't he hasn't settled into a role. It doesn't seem like Eric Spoelstra has found the right fit for him. He was playing backup small forward at first, and then he's playing backup power forward. Then he's starting at power forward, and now he's injured. So we'll see what happens when he comes back. But Kelly Olynyk was the starting power forward next to Hassan Whiteside in the last game against the Magic. And if that's the case, then I would imagine James Johnson is going to be coming off the bench. So where does that leave Winslow? What role does Winslow play, especially if you're looking for front court minutes for Bam Adebayo? And who knows where Bam's going to fit into there. Winslow so far has just been, I love Justice Winslow, but right now he's 10.
Right. Yeah, I think that's fair. I mean, and this isn't, again, because we have to rank these players or because we chose to rank these players, somebody has to fall to the wayside. Unfortunately, in this case, it's Winslow, who's shown improvement this year. This hasn't been the kind of complaints that we had about him at the start of the season or even last year when he was playing for those 19 games. This isn't the kind of offensive disaster that we've seen from Winslow in the past. He's just not taking that kind of leap that we had hoped for him. We had hoped that he'd be, as we saw in the first game of the season, that he'd embrace the role of the backup point guard. Unfortunately, that didn't work out for him either because he just wasn't thriving in that or because Spoelstra felt he wasn't comfortable in that position. He has taken leaps as far as his perimeter shooting is concerned. If we had started the season off thinking that Justice Winslow was going to be hitting 39% of his three-pointers, I think we would all be very pleased with that. But there just seems to be an overall sense that he just hasn't taken that leap and hasn't developed. And maybe those are unfair expectations that come with being the 10th pick in the 2015 draft. But either way, those are the expectations, and he needs to live up to them. And so far, he hasn't.
At number 9, I have Deion Waiters.
oh man, this list is starting to look eerily familiar because I unfortunately also have Deion
at number nine.
Yeah, he is obviously hurt now. You know, he'll be out for a few more games as far as we know, but he's played most of the season. Luckily, he's played 30 games despite a nagging ankle injury that we thought would keep him out for longer periods of time. You know, he just hasn't taken the kind of leap that we thought. Obviously, at the start of the season, I had projected him to be the team's leading scorer. I thought he felt very comfortable in Miami, as we saw in the second half of last season in particular, that that was going to be the launch pad, to use Tony Fiorentino's terminology, for a new, bigger, better position, or another version of Deion that we hadn't seen, and that hasn't been the case. His three-point shooting has regressed below his career marks. He's only shooting 30% from three-point range. He's shooting just 39.8% overall. That's not good. Just 14.3 points per game. He's not getting to the line very much. He hasn't taken the kind of steps that we thought he would take, and so that's why he comes in at nine.
Yeah, he's regressed, but you know, he's for me, he's been one of the most disappointing player on the Heat. I mean, and it's not even close. This whole season has been really a disappointment, like you were saying. I mean, all of his stats have regressed. But he did have a moment. He had a moment against the Boston Celtics when he scored 26 points and he had 6 assists in that win to break the Celtics' 16-game win streak. And that was huge. That was a big moment for this Heat team. One that I think helped them beat Boston a second time, right? Because they had that confidence to do that. And Boston has been at least the best, you know, one of the top two teams in the East all season long, regardless of who you ask. So he had a moment, but it wasn't enough. Those moments were kind of interspersed between consistent play last season, really through the second half of last season, and now those moments are fewer and further in between. And in between all of those, anything like that is just inconsistent, disappointing play. So that's why Waiters is at nine. Let's do one more. Hassan Whiteside, I have at eight.
Oh, this is scary. I also have Hassan Whiteside at eight. Like, I know that I'm sure we'll have some changes down the line here, yeah. But yes, I think Hassan at eight seems fair. I mean, if for no other reason than he just hasn't played very much. You know, we've talked about his complaints, I think, throughout the whole season, or our complaints about his play throughout the whole season. But overall, he just hasn't been a factor. He's had moments, as you say. He had a really big game against the Magic in the opener. He's had a couple other big games here and there, but those are fewer and further between. And unfortunately, he's regressed in some regards, too. He seems to be a problem as far as setting screens. His defense hasn't been as engaged as it has been in the past. He's just not putting up the kind of numbers. And at the same time, his overall attitude just hasn't been particularly, you know, engaged either. And so, you know, coupled with his lack of playing time, he just seems like a natural fit for the bottom half of this MVP ranking.
And it does seem like, at least from the outside, it does seem like he's starting to lose equity in that locker room. Right. I love that Goran Dragic quote about what he's learned since Hassan Whiteside's been out, is that Bam Adebayo should get more playing time, basically. is my favorite quote of the season so far, even though I'm paraphrasing. But it's not what Whiteside does, it's almost what Whiteside doesn't do when he's on the floor. You mentioned the setting of the screens, passing, keeping the offense moving. It just seems like he gets in the way of that fluid offense that is there when Olynyk or Bam is playing at center. And that's only part of it, though. And, you know, we talk about that a lot on the show, but the other part of this is he's only played 16 games this season, and that's why if he had played in maybe 20-plus games so far this year, if he had played in, like, 25 games, 26 games, he'd be higher on this list still, despite our complaints about him. Just because he is so productive from a points and rebounding standpoint, he would be higher on this list. And the Heat are 9-7 in games they've played with Whiteside. They have a winning record in games they've played with Whiteside this season, so that's worth something. But overall, he's only played 16 games. He hasn't played a whole lot. All right, we're going to move on to our seventh player in our Miami Heat Power Rankings. Maybe it'll be different, but first, you know, we don't talk about gambling much on this show, but people still tend to ask for our advice. Usually, it's what team to bet on. Do you have the Cavaliers or the Pistons, Miami or Charlotte? Well, we'll tell you this. Before you decide who to bet on, you need to know where you are betting. So that's why we always tell people to go to mybookie.ag. MyBookie has been in the business for years, and their rep is rock solid. They do 100% cash bonuses, so off the bat you're making money for doing nothing. And they have the fastest payout. Seriously, just 2 business days. So, you know who's going to win. Lay down some cash and win big today. I would only recommend a service to our listeners that's been good to us. That's why I'm urging you to make your way to MyBookie. You win, they pay. Here's our favorite part. They have in-game live betting, which is how I still stay interested in the NFL playoffs is an in-game live betting. Also, they have the most rewarding player perks in the business and an all-new mobile site that makes wagering on the go a breeze. Join now and MyBookie will match your deposit with up to a 100% bonus. Use the promo code LOCKEDONNBA to activate the offer. Again, visit MyBookie.ag today. Use the promo code LOCKEDONNBA. You play, you win, you get paid. Okay, number 7, David. Well, let's recap what we have so far. 11, we have Mickey. 10, we have Winslow. 9, we have Waiters. 8, we have Whiteside. Again, we drew up these lists separately of each other. We haven't seen them until this show. But they're the same through the last 4, I guess. Yeah. Who's your number 7?
Number 7 is Bam Adebayo.
Oh my gosh. We've done the show too long. It's what I was going to say. All right, why Bam?
You know, Bam is the first one where I use different kind of criteria because I don't think he's really had a moment as far as a game altering moment. Right. You know, he hasn't had the kind of opportunity to put up those numbers. Obviously, he didn't play much at the start of the season. But to me, and here again is why I think this is a different criteria for measuring Bam's success, is that he represents such great potential. In contrast of what we've seen from Whiteside, Bam is the opposite end of the spectrum, where he is almost all effort, and he just does such an incredible job defensively in particular, and we assume that offense will continue to step up. Look, it's different, I think, than the kind of talk we had about Winslow his rookie year, where we just saw these things in a very limited context because that team was so superstar-laden that we didn't need much from Winslow. Bam, conversely, has stepped up in Whiteside's absence. He's playing very quality minutes. He's not making mistakes, which is something that most rookies will make no matter where they're selected in the lottery or where they're selected, period. He's been just really, really solid overall. He shows incredible effort, particularly on the defensive end. Mm-hmm. He's been great rebounding. He's covered a number of positions defensively. That's something that we can really hang our hat on, is the fact that he's picked up, you know, quality guards across the league. He's also picked up big men. He's using his superior strength to hold them off. I can't forget, and maybe this might be his moment, I can't forget his defense against the San Antonio Spurs' LaMarcus Aldridge, even though that resulted in a Miami loss. The fact that he was able to close out onto LaMarcus, body him up, and then keep him from unleashing that deadly turnaround jumper that he uses so effectively, and to block that shot right in LaMarcus Aldridge's face, that was impressive as hell. And I know there's, you know, been other moments there, but to me, that was the one that really stands out the most. And he's just been great. And again, that potential is so tantalizing, and I keep seeing such greatness come out of him in the future. At just 20 years old, he's already living up to the hype as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, I mean, he hasn't had a moment, but he's had flashes, right? And that's what we look for from a rookie. It's just flashes. I mean, he's been, if this, you know, we talked about Deion Waiters, and I said that, you know, if this were a ranking of most disappointing, Waiters would be number one for most disappointing. If this were a ranking of most impressive, Bam Adebayo would be number one and most impressive, I think, just from where our expectations were going into the season. He's been phenomenal, and I think maybe that emotional part has us ranking him as high as we do at 7, but also, he has a way of making his teammates better. I mean, it doesn't necessarily show up in the plus-minus, but the Heat have been flirting with negative plus-minuses for most of the season. Even, like, Goran Dragic has like, a negative plus-minus when you look at his on-court ranking or his on-court statistics. It's not as negative as you'd think it would be for a rookie. And it's not as negative as Hassan Whiteside's is. So it's really our impression of what Bam has done in Whiteside's place that I think has him so high, is he's setting great screens. He's moving the ball on offense. He has a perimeter-oriented game in that he can move fluidly along the three-point line, set screens, participate in dribble handoffs, cut to the basket. He's following up shots. He's following up other people's shots, getting offensive rebounds. He's doing these little things that I think the Heat players appreciate a lot more, especially in juxtaposition to what Whiteside isn't doing, and that's why we have Bam here. Number 6, I have Tyler Johnson.
damn it. This is starting to get worrisome.
It is starting to get weird. It is starting to get weird. We swear we did not work on this together. Look, Tyler Johnson's, there's not much to say about Tyler Johnson other than he's just been a really good two-way player for the Heat this year. He's had moments, maybe he's had flashes where he is the guy off the bench. He's started in place for Deion Waiters. He's done a fine job of doing that. He's just, it's Tyler Johnson, man. Like, he is who he is. He plays super hard. I know Zach Lowe at some point in the season mentioned how hard he plays. I mean, this is a guy that has blocked the shots of big men multiple times this season just because he works so hard and because people don't really appreciate how high he could jump. I mean, his athleticism is still somehow underrated even after he signed a $50 million contract. So Tyler Johnson's my guy at number six.
Yeah, I agree. It's just, you know, again, we talked about our projections for Tyler Johnson at some point during the offseason, I think, and we labeled him as being probably one of the best six-man candidates in the league mm-hmm. just because that's his ceiling. You know, that's the best that he could possibly be. He's never going to be a guy who's going to become an all-star. He's never going to be a guy who becomes, you know, the face of your franchise, or at least you hope that's not the case. But he is always going to try his hardest. He's always going to do what he can out there to impact something positively. He's had nice moments as a closer or pseudo closer at the end of games. He's hit big free throws for us. You know, he's hitting just, let me see, 89% of his, 89% of his free throws. So that's been a very, very impressive part of his game. He's not getting to the line nearly enough to just 2.1 attempts per game. And his three-point shooting has, I guess, regressed a little bit at 34.7, but he's shooting more than ever. And you know, he's providing some floor spacing. He cuts to the rim when necessary. He does a lot of little things. You know, he's active. He stays engaged. You never have to worry about effort when it comes with him. And I think that means a lot, that he throws himself so recklessly out there despite his size limitations, really speaks volumes. And I think he's just a great player to have on your roster because, you know, you can put him in there and he can play a number of positions and he's always going to try his hardest. And that's why he's ranked as high as he is.
Number five, I have James Johnson, the other Johnson brother. So we first have a difference. Yes.
We have a difference. Yes.
Who do you have at five?
I've got Wayne Ellington.
Okay.
To me, I can understand why you had James Johnson in there. But for me, Wayne's early struggles and inconsistency at times have been a problem. Look, he's shooting very, very well. He's tied for the lead in most games played. So I think that's definitely something in his favor. He's played all 34 of Miami's games along with two other players on the roster. He leads the team in three-point attempts. He ranks second in three-point percentage, you know, 43.3% on the team. He's one of the top shooters in the league, obviously. But there are moments there where he'll go, you know, 1 of 9, 0 for 10, something along those lines, and then just blow up the next game or so. And you know, those are to be expected because that's been Ellington's problems throughout his whole career, is that you're never going to get the kind of consistent production from him that you'd hope. But he still provides such a valuable asset. This isn't necessarily a knock on him. I mean, the fact that he's, in my opinion, the fifth best player on that team really speaks a lot, I think, towards Ellington's improvement. You know, we've talked about his defensive improvement overall, the fact that Spoelstra was willing to go to him late in games to cover guys like Kyrie Irving and others. That's been a huge sign of confidence, I think, from Spoelstra, and a sign that Ellington has grown in that capacity. And I think he's been great. I think that there are still other players who have contributed more or offer more than what Ellington does. He's very limited in his offense. He's been great at it, but that's still been inconsistent and limited.
I have Ellington at four, so it's not much off. But, you know, what he does from a floor spacing standpoint is a lot of those things that we talk about when we talk about Steph Curry. Now, it's obviously not to that degree. But what he does just in altering the geometry of the floor, making defenses pay attention. Eric Spoelstra probably draws up more sets for Wayne Ellington than anybody else. If not, you know, I don't think there's any other player that's getting as more sets called for him as Wayne Ellington. Maybe Josh Richardson. It seems like he gets a lot of sets called for him because of his versatility. But Wayne Ellington's right up there. And what he's able to do as far as creating space for guys like Goran Dragic to get in the paint. I think if Deion Waiters were playing better, Wayne Ellington would look even more valuable. You know what I mean? So as far as what he does, and that is, I have factored in a lot of what Ellington has done lately. You know, he's been on a tear, an absolute tear recently. In the last 10 games, he's number one on the team in plus-minus. He's tied with Kelly Olynyk, but he's number one on the team in plus-minus. I mean, that speaks volumes as to what he's able to, how the team performs when he's on the floor, and it just seems like lately The team always plays better when Ellington is on the floor, and that's why we see him at the end of, when he's in there at the end of these ball games. The reason I had James Johnson at five is just because he's James Johnson. He's a versatile two-way player. Yeah. He's become more valuable as Waiters has become less valuable as far as being now going from a tertiary ball handler, you know, at best, maybe a secondary ball handler, a release, but more importantly, a release valve for Goran Dragic so he could play off the ball a little bit more, even though a lot of guys are starting to take that role on, Josh Richardson in particular. That's why I had Johnson at five. Who is your number four?
It's actually James Johnson. Perfect. So it works out pretty good. I mean, look, he's shooting 33.3% on three-point shots, has an overall effective field goal percentage of 55%. He ranks fourth on the team in rebounds per game. That's amazing. And second in assists and steals per game at 4 and 1, respectively. He's 6th in points per game at 10.8. And that's it. Those statistics show the kind of impact he had. It's the versatility. You're going to get something from him. Look, he struggled early on, and I think maybe he might be higher on this list despite the recent injury, just because of those early season struggles. And you know, he was making passes that were out of control. He didn't seem like he was fully aware of where he fit in the offense at times. Spoelstra waffled between bringing him off the bench or having him in the starting lineup. And it seems now, where even before the injury, he seemed like he was comfortable doing either one, coming off the bench or as a starter. He was going to play his game. He was going to play very well. And the fact that he can pick up guards, centers, and anyone in between speaks incredibly high of the kind of player he is defensively. And the fact that his offense has become stable and not necessarily regress as much as we had worried it might, I think it has been a great sign from him. And I'm glad that he's on the team. I'm happy that they signed him. Look, I know a lot of people had complaints as far as the overall contract is worth. And you know, maybe there's complaints will prove to be valid, you know, considering his age. But so far, I think he's lived up to the deal, and yeah, he's been a very, very good player.
One of the few players who have really lived up to their deals from the offseason, him and Ellington, really.
Yeah.
As far as guys that were on the team last year. And
yeah, sounds good.
All right, we're going to get to our top three here. Quick reminder first to make sure that you are subscribed to Locked On Heat on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, wherever you get your podcasts. To leave us a review on iTunes to help other Heat fans discover the show. Also, be sure to check out the rest of what the Locked On Podcast Network has to offer, including shows for every NBA and NFL team, plus Locked On Fantasy Basketball. The Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. All right, we've gone through most of the list. Let's just recap here. Starting with 11, we both had Jordan Mickey. At number 10, we both had Winslow. At number 9, we both had Deion Waiters. At number 8, we both had Hassan Whiteside. At number 7, we both had Bam Adebayo. At number 6, we both had Tyler Johnson. At number 5 is where we started to differ. I had James Johnson, you had Wayne Ellington, but it wasn't a whole lot different because at 4, you had James Johnson and I had Wayne Ellington. And now we're on to our top 3 most valuable Heat players in the Heat in the Miami Heat Power Rankings. Number 3, David, I have Kelly Olynyk.
Bam, same here.
There we go. So, look, I mean,
back on track.
The good contract.
Oh no, I'm saying back on track as far as both of us are being on the same page. Oh. You know, it's a little frightening, but yeah, I mean, maybe back it just makes track. Sense. Maybe we just know the Heat so perfectly well that this yes. is why our list is so similar.
It's subjective, but really when you think about it, it's objective. Look, Olynyk's on-off stats have been through the roof all season long. I mean, that's just one part of this, though. It's all of those things we heard and read about what the Heat liked about Kelly Olynyk when they signed him have absolutely, you know, happened on the floor, right? They've absolutely just been the case. I mean, they talked about how he's got great ball handling skills. We see that fake dribble handoff, run rim dunked at the rim several times this season. That's good ball handling. We heard that he sets the best screens in the NBA. Now, I wouldn't go that far, but he sets damn good screens, and we've seen that so far. We heard about his passing skills. Well, we've seen that so far. We heard about his floor spacing ability, how he could stretch the floor with his three-point shooting. He's been a phenomenal three-point shooter this season. All of the things we read and heard about Kelly Olynyk over the summer after Miami signed him have been the case so far, and the team just seems to play better with Olynyk. He is a perfect fit next to Goran Dragic and a perfect fit next to Deion Waiters if he ever got his act together. He just makes a lot of sense for this team. They have his versatility has allowed them to play him at power forward, which they are doing now, whether it be next to Bam Adebayo or more recently next to Hassan Whiteside. He's, as the season has gone along and maybe as he's gotten more comfortable in the offense, he's just gotten better, which is really exciting.
Yeah. I think, you know, I can't help but think about Kelly Olynyk and when he first signed with Miami, and I think there was a kind of general shock. You know, at one point we're in the running for Gordon Hayward, and then a few days later we're offering this incredible amount of money towards Kelly Olynyk. And I don't think a lot of Heat fans knew what to expect. And I'll be honest with you, I don't know that I knew what to expect out of him. What I'd gotten so far from people who cover the Celtics and from what I'd seen is that he had great potential. He did space the floor. He was a great passer, et cetera. But he was also inconsistent. And while we've seen some of those inconsistencies, I think a lot of that has been from his playing time being up and down. There were spots there earlier in the season when Spoelstra was playing him 12 minutes a game as opposed to his usual 16 to 18 minutes per game. And that was affecting Olynyk's ability to make a positive impact. But overall, he's just been phenomenal. I love watching him pull the ball down at 6'11", bring it up court with a real fluidity, like a point guard level of skill, and just be able to find somebody cutting towards the rim. Look, he's been great. He's tied for the lead in most games played. He's played in all 34 games along with Wayne Ellington. Leads the team in three-point percentage. I mean, this is a guy who's almost 7 feet tall, and he's shooting 45.5% from three on almost three attempts per game. He's tied for fifth in assists per game, tied for third in steals per game, and seventh in points per game. He's been able to do everything. Like you said, he's a perfect complement out there. He shows versatility at the center position. He's been a starter. He's been a backup. He's been a forward. He's been a center. He's done it all. Whenever he's out there, he makes a positive impact, and that's the kind of I think the best case scenario for Kelly, and I think he certainly lived up to the deal and the expectations anybody might have had of him.
I mean, you mentioned the playing time, and you mentioned the three-point attempts. I think those three-point attempts are going to go up. They have been going up, and they're going to continue to go up as he gets more playing time. He might not be a perfect fit at power forward next to a traditional center, but he has been so good that he has forced Eric Spoelstra to play him. I mean, sometimes fit isn't necessarily perfect, but just overall production and talent will overcome that. We've seen that several times throughout the league and the Miami Heat in general. Olynyk is, we have him ranked higher than James Johnson. We have him ranked higher than Justice Winslow. We have him ranked higher than every other option at power forward, and for a good reason. He is forcing himself onto the floor. He's getting more minutes that way.
And I'll add this when it comes to Olynyk also. Like we talked about following the Celtics win last week, that could be the benchmark hallmark win for the Heat that kind of catapults them into a strong second half or a stronger second half than what we've seen during the first 30 games of the season. And, you know, his 30 something points, a career high, that could be what saves Miami seasons, if you will. You know, a lot of people looked at Miami was ranked 11th in the Eastern Conference a couple of weeks ago. Mm-hmm. And now they're tied for eighth. I think, I mean, they've moved up in the standings. They've had a favorable schedule being at home. But Olynyk has been a really big part of Miami's success lately, and he deserves all the credit for it.
Number two, I have Josh Richardson.
Ooh.
Are we different?
I do not.
Okay, everybody knows our number one then. So you have Richardson at one, and you have Dragic at two?
Yes,
correct. Okay, so I have Dragic at one, and I have Richardson at two, and I don't feel great about it. So I'm going to let you talk me into having Richardson at one. How about we do it that way? I mean, Richardson is one of three players who have played all 34 games for Miami so far. He's been the best two-way player on the team, and it's not close. But I still go ahead.
A lot of people hate that two-way player terminology, because if you're the best two-way player, doesn't that just make you the best player, period? If you're the best offensively,
that's your argument, you have a really good argument. So go ahead. I mean, I have Dragic at one because he still leads the team in points per game and assists per game. So I feel like from a production standpoint, he is. I tried to think, what would this team be without Dragic? And I don't think that this is a team that can even hit, that has a chance of hitting 500 just because of who they have backing them up.
That's fair.
But if you got rid of Josh Richardson, I think Richardson improves the team's ceiling right now,
Yeah.
But I think if you don't have Richardson in there, you know, maybe you start Wayne Ellington in that spot, or you start Tyler Johnson, or you do something else, and the Heat with Goran Dragic but without Josh Richardson could still probably be a 500 ball club. But without Dragic, I just don't think they have a chance of being 500. I just think they are one of the worst teams in the NBA. That's why I had Dragic at one, more from a theoretical standpoint. But I'm very, like I said though, I wish I could have Josh Richardson at one. I want to emotionally put Richardson at one. I just couldn't do it. So why were you able to pull the trigger on that?
To me, it's just, it is the impact that he makes defensively. The fact that he covers probably the team's best wing player on any given night, and that we probably don't take into consideration because of that disruptive defense. We don't take into consideration, it might not necessarily result in statistics. It might not wind up in a steal. It might not wind up in a block, but he's there using his length, making things uncomfortable for players. And I think he probably affects Miami's point total, point differential, more than any other player because of that, because he keeps opposing scorers from getting comfortable and finding their rhythm. And I think that speaks volumes as to what his impact is, even though it might not necessarily be measurable. It might necessarily be something that results in statistics that you can list in the box score. But I think his overall impact changes the game more than any other player. And not to say that Dragic is a bad defensive player. I think he's been, stuck with a bad defending label for a long time, but that hasn't really been the case for a number of years since he came to Miami. He's improved in that department. Yeah. He's not the best defender at the point guard position, but I mean, a lot of people think Russell Westbrook is a good defender, and he's far from it. He's a terrible defender, actually. So, for a guy like Dragic, he's in the opposite, spectrum, in that a lot of people think he's a bad defender. He's actually a pretty solid one. He's not the greatest, but he's pretty good overall. Look, I love Dragic. Everybody knows that. If you've ever heard this show, his three-point shooting, his personality, his effort is continuous. But you've also talked a number of times about the need to see more out of him. Like, he hasn't been nearly as aggressive as we'd like. And I think Richardson is now feeling as confident as he is and going in the opposite direction, where he is being more aggressive. He's doing things. He's taking those shots when they're open and available. He's creating offense for himself, something that I don't think he was comfortable doing the first two seasons that he was with Miami. And now even at the start of the season, I don't think he was comfortable doing it. And now all of a sudden he's become their best player. And I think that's indicative in my ranking of him as first overall, because he is what makes Miami not just a good team, but a potentially great one. And I think we're going to continue to see that improvement throughout the rest of the year.
I think we'll see more improvement also from Dragic as maybe Bam, so. And Bam and Olynyk get a little bit more playing time. Maybe Whiteside's playing time comes down a little bit, because that Whiteside, if from a qualitative standpoint, we believe that Goran Dragic and Whiteside are the Miami's two best players, just like in a vacuum, right? We knocked Whiteside down a lot of spots because he hasn't played a whole lot and he hasn't been as effective as we'd like when he's been playing. But if you just qualitatively say Dragic and Whiteside are Miami's two best players, they don't play well together. Right? They play well together from a production standpoint, just because they're both so productive as players, but they don't necessarily have that chemistry that Olynyk has with Kelly Olynyk, or that Dragic has with Kelly Olynyk, or with even Bam Adebayo, right? We already know that Dragic appreciates what Adebayo is able to do on the floor.
Absolutely.
So let's just recap our rankings really quick. Number 11, we had Jordan Mickey. 10, we both had Winslow. 9, we both had Waiters. 8, we both had Whiteside. 7, we both had Bam. 6, we both had Tyler Johnson. 5, I had James Johnson, you had Ellington. At 4, you had James Johnson, and I had Ellington. And then number 3, we both had Olynyk. And then number 2, I had Richardson, you had Dragic. And at number 1, you had Josh Richardson, and I had Dragic. So very, very similar, right?
Yeah.
Overall. So hey, maybe we...
I'm curious, not to cut you off there, but I'm curious to see if our listeners have a different take on this. Obviously we don't want we'll take it, but we don't necessarily expect them to provide a 1-11 ranking as far as their most valuable player so far. But it was just so interesting. Like, I think I told you over the holiday break, I was down in Miami watching the Pelicans game at a bar, and just the opinion of people on Justice Winslow. They think he's washed. They think he's a bust. They think he's nothing but the occasional defensive player who doesn't do much, and they completely discount his growth on the offensive end. Conversely, they love Bam Adebayo. They think he's the future of the franchise, and they love his effort and defense, and they think he's going to be an all-star. So I'm curious to see if we're off base here. I don't think that we are, but I want to hear from our listeners. I'm hoping that people will listen to this show and say, you know what, you guys are crazy. It's Whiteside. It's James Johnson. It's Ellington. It's somebody. And I'm very, very, very curious to hear whether or not anybody has a difference of opinion.
Yeah, please do, and let us know what you thought about this exercise. If you guys like this, we could base shows on our power rankings like this more times in the future. Maybe we do it maybe do it every other week or something like that. So let us know what you think. You could do that by sending an email to lockedonheat@gmail.com. That's all we have for today. We'll be back tomorrow, but thank you for listening. Thank you for subscribing. You can tweet your questions and comments for our recaps using the hashtag AskLOHeat. We'll probably do that next week since we don't have a game until Friday night and we won't have a recap after that. Music is courtesy of Mojave Wild. We'll catch you next time. Thanks for joining me, David.
You got it, Wes.